thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast from Celtic Underground. You are possibly picking this up on thecelticunderground.substack.com. If you are a paid subscriber, you can link your account to wherever you pick up your podcasts, whether that be Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever, and you can pick up the subscription feed where you get your normal feed. Just go on to Substack on the website and follow the instructions. Meantime, this is Andrew H. Smith in conversation.
Hi, and welcome to the latest edition of our Celtic Underground in Conversation series. And today I'm joined by a man who was a hero of the Centenary season. He's a blooming great fella. But more than that, for a spell at the Celtic View in the early 90s, he was our fifth Beatle. He was the fifth member of the Celtic View team. But I'll explain that later. Andy, great to have you on, my friend.
Lovely to be here, Andra, and great to see you. Haven't seen you for too long.
I know. Well, I'm not in the scene anymore, and you're a bit the same yourself kind of thing. But, well, life goes on. But as I say, I'll explain.
When I do games now, Andra, I'm doing more games down south. I was down at Hull on Tuesday there, Hull Ipswich. Actually had a brief chat with Kieran McKenna. Had a laugh about his Celtic links. And I'm down at Sunderland this weekend, Sunderland Bournemouth. I'm just still fortunate to be going to games and working at them. So looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah, we used to go to Sunderland quite a bit, you know, when I was working for the Scotsman, Scotland Sunday, and they always treated you well. It was one of the clubs I liked going to, was Sunderland down
the North East England. Is great. I go to a lot of Newcastle games, which is brilliant. I had a month at Newcastle, which was stupid. I went there when I was injured. But Sunderland, I mean, I did some games there last season. They're in the Championship, 42,000 at the games. It's really good to see them do so well.
It's brilliant. Brilliant. I always thought there was some kind of affinity with Celtic, but maybe I was just kidding myself on, because there was never an affinity. I took my daughter to see Sam Fender at Newcastle at St. James's Park in the summer, and they were all saying to me, "Oh, Celtic, we can't wait to play Celtic." I said, "Don't expect a warm welcome." I said, "You guys are too..." I said, "You've clapped Rangers," because I'd been at the pre-season friendly the summer before. "You clapped Rangers when they sang God Save the Queen. You ain't getting a welcome at Celtic." They went, "What?" Well, they couldn't get it.
In recent years, I've seen Paddy Roberts there. I've seen Aidan McGeady there.
Yeah.
And they both did really well, Paddy Roberts especially. But I think he's... Where is he now? He's at Birmingham now, I think.
Right. He is at Birmingham. But I should explain my intro there. Like, it wasn't a great time for you, but it just... I know why you went into punditry and such like, because of your command of facts and your memories. When Liam Brady ostracised you, and I think that's no too strong a word, ostracised you in 91-92, that was your fourth season at Celtic. Yeah, I didn't realise until I was prepping for this, you only get two substitute appearances that whole season for the first team.
Yeah, so when Liam came in, Andra, I spoke to him immediately, and he said, "Andy, you're not part of my setup." And I was absolutely fine with it. I was good to go. I felt as though, when I look back, maybe the first couple of years, I pretty much played every week when I was fit. Last couple of seasons, not so much, and I had signed a 4-year contract. But I was good to go, and then it was, I think at that time, the Taylor Report was affecting a lot of clubs. You had to spend a lot of money on your stadium to upgrade it in the aftermath of Hillsborough. Players weren't moving as freely as they once were. I stupidly went to Newcastle on loan. I mean, I was excited about going there because it's such a great club and I would love to have stayed longer, but I went there when I was injured, and initially me and Liam were absolutely fine. And then Motherwell came in for me, Falkirk came in for me. They offered money. Liam said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "I don't want to go back to Motherwell. I've been there, and I don't want to go to Falkirk. I just want to go down south. I want to continue my career down south." And he just went off in one. He said, "If you don't go to either of those clubs, I'm under a lot of pressure. If you don't go to either of those clubs, I'm going to stop your wages," which really took my breath away. My wife was pregnant at the time. Not a good message to bring home. But we had a meeting, me, Tony Higgins. I went with my dad and we met Liam and we met Tommy Craig and we sorted it out. So he didn't in the end stop my wages, but he did daft things. He made me go to the under-18 games, be a substitute. I think Benny Rooney at the time was looking after that group of players. And the instruction was to put me on with a minute to go in every game. I mean, it was just pathetic. And as I've said before, I just lost all respect that I had for Liam. It was just a silly thing to do.
But we were the beneficiaries, which is the point of the fifth Beatle, because we didn't used to. If we knew you were in an under-18s game, or we knew it was a lot of reserve league West games, you spared us going to Dumfries to Queen of the South and Stenhouse Muir and all that. Even 8-0 wins, we could come to you the next morning and say, can you talk us through it? And you didn't just even know the goal scorers. You used to be able to describe all the goals, even if there was...
Well, I remember the likes of Jerry Craney, Jerry Britton, Brian McLaughlin, Mark McNally, Barry Smith, just young lads who were all dead keen, and Jamie McQuilkin, they were all dead keen to make their own way. And they all showed a lot of promise at different stages, different times. I think all of them got a bit of an opportunity at one time or another. I think maybe in the days, Andrew, when you would turn to your reserves, your youth team, if you had any injuries, suspensions, I think now the way football is going, it's very much global. Celtic could sign a player from any part of the world and invariably do, but you would very rarely now do you turn to your reserves, youth team, young lads, academy as they call it now. I think you have to be exceptional to get an opportunity now in the first team if you're coming through the ranks.
I mean, it just wasn't working then, and it was such a contrast with what you experienced when you hit the ground running. I mean, it was an incredible start to your Celtic career, and there's a lot of pressure on you, and that was a lot of pressure on Celtic. Everybody knew what the centenary season meant. Yeah. I was looking back in some cuts there before we come on, and it said you were a surprise signing. That wasn't in my memory, but was it a surprise that Celtic came for you in the summer of 87?
The surprise for me was that my dad came to me in the March, and he said he'd been speaking to one of the Celtic directors, and David Hay was the manager at the time, and their intention was to come and sign me at the end of the season. And my dad had known this for some time, so this was March, but he only told me because we being Motherwell, we had just been knocked out of the Scottish Cup. So I think we got to the quarterfinals, and we played Dundee United at Fir Park. We get beat, and so we just had a few league games left, and... Anyway, my dad told me that Celtic were interested and were going to come and sign you. So that sort of blew me away a wee bit. And I remember a mixture of excitement, trepidation from March onwards. You know, I'm playing for Motherwell and I'm thinking about this constantly. And then at the end of the season, I was wondering what was going to happen. Of course, Davy Hay got the sack. So yeah. I thought this deal was going to fall through. I don't know who the new manager is going to be, but I didn't think it would happen at that point. And then I got a call from Tommy McLean. Can you come into the park? Something's happening. I'm thinking, my God, I'm going to sign for Celtic. He told me Dundee United were in for me. I was a wee bit wet behind the ears at the time. I didn't really realise he's stitching me up. He's obviously Celtic are in, but he prefer me to go to his brother at Dundee United. Jim McLean was the manager then, and he's waxing lyrical about Jim and what he'll do for you as a player. And I mean, I should say at this point, I don't think I would have had a career without Tommy McLean. He was that good a coach. I wasn't a striker. He'd signed me from junior football. I was a winger. I was a midfield player. I wasn't a striker. And he turned me into a striker, and he was brilliant for me. In any event, I went up to Dundee with my dad just to go through the process of what they had to offer. And, you know, my dad was a lot smarter than me. Let's use this, Andy, let's hear what they've got to offer, and we can use it at the negotiating table for, you know, whoever's next. And then Billy, Billy got the job, of course, and Billy was a family friend. Billy was round our house often. My dad was a chartered accountant. My dad acted for Billy, a lot of his business interests. When Billy gets sacked from Celtic, his first call was to my old man.
Wow.
And, you know, Celtic were wanting to do daft things, and my old man went up and sorted it all out. So Billy, I didn't know what to expect. But John Kelman was the chief scout at the time.
And yeah, Billy, I remember John.
Had a relationship with John, and the scouting reports that John had made for Davy Hay, I think Billy just took them up, and he called me and said, we want to do this. And so that was that. I was on my way to Celtic, and yeah, I did. I felt, I mean, my Celtic are the sort of early 80s when you're, you know, Danny's team, when you'd, you know, Tam Burns and Roy Aitken and McCluskey, Nicholas, McGarvey, McAdam. I thought that early 80s team was really good. And that was at a time where I was going to see Celtic. I wouldn't say every week. I went to some away games, but not all. But I was at every home game. And the only reason I turned away from that was I had to play in a, I really wanted to be a footballer. So I was playing Saturday morning with the school, Saturday afternoon with Easter Craigs. Amateur football was really competitive. And then a Sunday I played with a team in East Kilbride. And you could do that then. And there's a lot of nonsense now where, you know, you'll get bad coaching if you go to this and that. But schools football was great for me. And just very competitive. And I think I came on as a young lad playing schools football. And everything, it was just a bit different then, as you know.
Of course. But you weren't, I mean, people were presenting you as the replacement for Brian McLaren. With the greatest respect, you didn't have that kind of potency in the sense of his goal scoring. His last season, I think it was 44 goals or whatever. That obviously it's different when you're at a club like Motherwell. You don't get as many chances, and we know all that. But you know, it was some mantle for you to be thrust into. In the sense of, like, you weren't.
Yeah,
you weren't
I was never a goal scorer. I mean, I played in a relegation team. We were fighting relegation at Motherwell. In my first year, we got promotion from a championship into the top flight. In my second year, we should have been relegated, but there was league reconstruction. That was a big break for me because it gave me another opportunity to play against Celtic and Rangers. And you got to remember, Aberdeen and Dundee United had the best teams in their history around that time. I signed for Motherwell in 84. So Dundee United were just off the back of winning the league. Aberdeen were just off the back of winning a European trophy. The level of competition, the standard of player, and actually yeah. Scottish players was just, I mean, Hegarty and Neary at Dundee United, you know, Stunnock, Bannon, Milne, and then you had Miller and McLeish at Aberdeen. You could rhyme off a million. I mean, I played against a Dundee United side whose back four was Gough, Hegarty and Neary Malpass. I mean, you could put all them in the Scotland team. And
easily. Easily.
But no, I obviously I was really keen to do well, and pre-season was a big wake-up call. We'd gone to Sweden, and I struggled in the games. And when I say struggled, I mean, I could always control a ball and pass it, but I struggled to score. And then I think in the last game, before we went home, we maybe played four or five games. I scored a hat-trick, and they were all sort of tap-ins, you know, nothing special, but just really, really good to get off the mark. And I think I was very lucky, and I've said this a million times, I played alongside Mark McGee, and Mark had a wonderful career, and I just felt as though he wanted to impart all of his knowledge, whatever he had, onto me. He wanted me to be a better player. He would coach me during a game. We played my first league game of the season.
I scored
a couple. Big Starkey, who was a new signing, and Mark got one himself.
I remember rightly.
So
He did.
That was me off and running, and I felt as though I was getting better as a player, because every day at training was so competitive, and I knew I had to raise my game every day in training, never mind games on a Saturday. So training really helped. I loved training, and our training was great. Tommy Craig, Billy, put on great sessions, demanded so much of the players. And of course, I don't think you had to demand of Roy yeah. and Tommy and Mick McCarthy and Tam Burns, Pat Bonner, Granty, Paul McStay. These were, I mean, Granty and Paul were my age, but had played, I don't know, a good number of years for Celtic. And I felt as though
They were well established.
I had a lot of catching up to do.
But you did it pretty quickly. I mean, there's the easy line about Frank McAvaney made you. He come in November, and that partnership really, really made you. But you scored 8 goals in your first 12 games for Celtic, and Frank wasn't yes. there.
I have a great laugh with Frank. Whenever I'm with Frank, and you know we might be maybe signing a picture, or we were in Dubai at Celtic Rangers thing. And we were signing all this stuff. And Frank, I always say to Frank is, whenever they speak to me, you want to say a few words, and you're Frank. Oh, Frank was great. I can't tell you how proud he is. He is the proudest Celtic I've ever known. I mean, he is so proud to have been the second top goal scorer in the centenary year. He absolutely hates that one. He says, I only got there in November. I would have scored more than you. So anyway, I did that one where we actually totted it up from November till the end of the season, and
I still scored 32 goals.
Andrew, you're dead right to highlight Frank. He was brilliant for me, really. What a worker, and
his work
even
rate
at training
was
tremendous. He did everything. He was so good in the air. He was a real workhorse. He could score with his right, his left. He just chased everything. And we had our pre-season was all about closing down. They call it now a high press or whatever. Just closing down. The amount of times we won the ball back in the opposition half and played from there. We had players. We had Tam, we had Starkey, we had Granny and Paul McStay, and then it was me, Frank, and we Joe signed, you know, a few months into the season as well. So
Joe was brilliant.
He was magnificent.
Frank and wee Joe, I mean, that was just the final pieces of the jigsaw, wasn't it?
For that season. I think Billy was so pleased to get Frank, because you just need, I think all the Celtic teams that I've seen, they've always had big personalities. You know, my favourite team when I watched Charlie and Frank McGarvey, George McCluskey, just big personalities. And Frank was the same. I mean, he was a great worker. He doesn't like to hear about that. He just likes to hear about all of his other stuff. I was his roommate for a while, and it was just...
My word.
Fun.
How did you offend the Lord for that to be? How was he as a roommate?
He was great. He had no mobile phones. So whenever the phone would go, it would be some sort of page 3 bird that he'd met. And Frank used to be really bored of speaking to them, so he'd pass it on to me. So I'd be chatting to some page 3 bird for 5 or 10 minutes. I mean, I was a married man, just listening to all their woes about, can you tell Frank? And can you ask Frank to? Aye, sure, Hen, I'll do that. Aye, no bother. All good fun.
God, so it wasn't all exaggerated?
Some things were exaggerated, but I was very blessed to have played alongside Frank. And actually, I was really angry at him when he left, because I thought, what are you doing? Wait, you've been there. I was really angry because I knew it would affect me. And I was being very selfish because he was such a wonderful player and undoubtedly the best striker I played alongside.
Yeah, and one of the best. As we go, you know, as the years pass, people maybe forget just how good he was for it. Like, it was just eye-popping. He was, I think, and I know it's quite a kind of bold statement to make, but in terms of people remember Larson more recently, but in terms of what he was at his peak for Celtic, and it took him a wee while to get there, because, you know what my great memory is? The first game he signed, and he come over at the jungle, and he's waving, and he could hardly get his hands together because his stomach, you know what I mean? He wasn't exactly in great shape when he turned up. Was he? He was the roly-poly hoops.
He was a great badge kisser as well. which we always gave him a bit of stick for. He stayed for about 18 months, and then he back to London. But no, he's a lovely guy, great company. I've played a lot of golf with Frank. I see him from time to time, and it's always a warm welcome we give each other.
And you must have knew something was stirring the whole squad. We all knew as punters, as I was then, because I hadn't started at the View. But, you know, we knew something was stirring. You must have thought, wow, this is... Chris Morris has been on here, and he said, we just couldn't believe it. It was like it was preordained, it was fated, that, you know, everything came together.
Well, you mentioned Chris, and I scored a few goals with his passes, his crosses. Chris and Anton were wonderful fullbacks in the tradition that you would expect of a successful Celtic team. The fullbacks were very attack-minded, very often wingers. Starkey scored the goal against Rangers in the first game at Parkhead when Souness gets sent off. And, you know, you talk about that game so often, and everyone... And they talk about, you know, not letting the atmosphere affect you. I've been in games where Graham Souness, Terry Butcher, you know, Mark Hatley, guys that have had the most wonderful careers, and they've lost it. They've absolutely lost it in this game, and they've been sent off.
Yeah.
It does things to you. You need... Frank's dead right when Billy said to us before we went out at Ibrox, remember, Frank, don't get involved. And there's a picture. Yeah. I mean, normally, so you see Frank going in with three Rangers players. I mean, normally you would expect teammates to be around you. There is a picture of Frank. I don't know who it is, shoving him in the neck or the chin or whatever. And you see me about 20 yards away, and I'm thinking, don't get involved. And then we went in the dressing room at half time. Of course, we're 2-0 up, and we're pretty ecstatic. Frank was raging. Where were you? I said, Frank, don't get involved.
Thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast. However, if you are a paid subscriber, keep listening. There's more of the podcast left.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to the CelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.